Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 11. A Little More Hacking. While Nick struggled to stop his legs from drifting up past his head, Elf, Jenny and James floated horizontally, all perfectly poised to travel through the portal. In a well-rehearsed motion, they kicked off the wall, propelling themselves towards the swishing dark greys and blacks that were the trees in the bottom of Elf's garden in Brighton. "Come on, you," Elf said playfully, giving Nick's hand a tug. He offered no resistance. He couldn't have, even if he tried, and found himself gliding through the portal, lagging a little behind the others. To say he had difficulty getting his bearings on the other side was an understatement. He had no idea which way was up. All he could see were thick evergreen branches swaying in the wind right by his face. He was spinning round slowly, rotating around multiple axes, when Elf tugged his hand and, like a ballroom dancer in slow motion, he curled back in toward her. The moon arced above him, which was both orienting and disorienting at the same time. Then the moon disappeared, and his free arm started dragging against the fronds of a tree. He was tempted to cling to the tree for dear life, but then he was clear of the tree and in the open air again. James called back quietly, "Steady yourselves." Nick was in no position to steady himself. His feet were floating upwards, while Elf acted like a tugboat towing him down. He pulled back against her grip in an effort to right himself, but ended up ploughing headfirst into Elf, who shoved into Jenny, who piled into James. Cece scampered out of the tangle of bodies and was holding on to the edge of Elf's gown with one hand while waving at Nick with the other, a big grin on her face. "Hey," James said as the other three compressed into him. "Two can play at that game." And without warning, Nick felt the invisible hand of gravity suddenly seizing every part of him at once and yanking him earthwards. He was free-falling, but only for a split second, after which he landed on top of Elf, his full weight bearing down across her shoulders, crushing her into Jenny and James. "Sorry," Nick said, grabbing at the fir tree to pull himself up. His body felt heavier than he remembered, and he rolled rather awkwardly off the pile of bodies and onto the ground, landing on his back in a clump of long, damp grass. He looked up to see Elf looking over Jenny's shoulder, laughing at him. She flipped herself up and off Jenny, like a gymnast dismounting from a pommel horse. Cece swung down from a nearby branch in the tree.
"Not bad for your first go," Elf said, giving Nick a hand up.
"Really?" he said, struggling to his feet and brushing damp grass from his trousers. "No," Jenny said, struggling to hold back a laugh. "You were awful." She stood up and helped James up. "Not as bad as the time we had to drag the whole gang out of the Engineerium before crashing into that big top," he said, picking up the key to the air and putting it away in his bag. "It doesn't take long to get used to it," Jenny said. "It's a bit like scuba diving, really." Nick looked blank. It must have shown. "Yeah, me and Elf don't know what she means either," James said. "Lots of people have done scuba diving. It's not that uncommon," Jenny protested. "And I only did it once, on a family holiday. And I think it's a pretty good analogy for magic floating." They walked up the garden on a well-trodden path through the long, unmown grass. Tall evergreen trees behind them, and in front was the back of a row of terraced houses. Not little terraces, like the estate near Nick's flat in Luton, but 4 or 5 stories tall. Wide steps led up to a decked area that ran the whole width of the house. Elf unlocked a glass door in the middle of a wall of glass, and they all trooped inside. It was the poshest house that Nick had ever been in. Not grand and old like the house at Twitchell's, but still, he thought his whole flat would fit into the space they were standing in. There was a massive dining table to the right of a huge open-plan kitchen with high ceilings and hard wooden floors.
On one end of the dining table was a sewing machine, and on the other was a laptop next to piles of ring-bound notebooks. To the right of the table was an exercise bike surrounded by a set of weights and other gym equipment.
"This is your house?" Nick asked Elf.
"My parents, yes."
She turned the light on. Not just any light, a giant glass bulb as big as a football that hung down over the middle of the table. Its spiral orange filament lit the room.
"Are they here, your parents?"
Nick squinted round in the light, half expecting someone to appear and yell at them.
"No. Drink, anyone?"
"I'm fine," James said.
"I'll make tea." Jenny took her gown off and piled it onto the table. She had a rucksack on underneath, which she dumped on a chair on the way to the kitchen. Elf was already pulling something out of a cupboard. James put his bag on the table next to the laptop. Cece jumped onto Jenny's gown and used it as a makeshift bed. Nick took an empty seat at the end of the table and pulled his laptop out, opened the lid, entered his password, and noticed that Brutifier had failed to crack the SatNet password outside the dorm. Then he checked the nearby networks and connected to the strongest one, which had a really weird name. When it prompted him for a password, he set Brutifier on it. This time the password guesser came back with a success message in a matter of seconds.
"Wine or tea?"
Elf called out, holding up a dark bottle with an orange label on it.
Tea,
Nick said, not sure whether the alcoholic offering was a serious one. Elf gave a shrug, disappointment or disapproval, and picked a large wine glass off the draining board. She brought the glass and the bottle over to the dining table, taking the seat by the sewing machine.
"Suit yourself."
She unscrewed the top of the bottle and half-filled the glass with a dark red liquid. The label on the side of the bottle said Malbec, written in a fancy script. James must have read Nick's shocked expression. "She's French," he said. "It's like water to her. Tastes of rancid petrol, if you ask me."
"No, it doesn't. Have a taste."
She offered the glass to Nick. He reached for it carefully with both hands and took a sip. It was not rancid, but given a choice, if the others hadn't been watching him, he would have gladly spat it out in the sink. He swallowed it down. "Thanks," he managed to say, handing the glass back.
"I can get you a glass. There's plenty of wine in this house."
"Just say no," James said. "Getting drunk won't help us understand this tracking software. Talking of which, our Wi-Fi network's the one called Squidducken, and the password's..." "Really weak," Nick said. "I'm in already." The kettle boiled. Jenny filled a teapot and carried it over to the table, putting it down on a glass mat. Then she hovered over Nick's left shoulder while he opened a browser and brought up a website. James dragged his chair round to get a view of the screen. "I guess you're bored of Twitchell's food already. Only Asda's finest for the kid from Luton," he said. Ignoring the comment, Nick clicked through a set of options and picked the next available delivery slot. "This isn't for me," he said, once the order was complete. "It's my granddad's weekly shopping. I do it for him because he's not great with doing things online, and I didn't get the chance to do it earlier because of the caretaker."
"Not because you were busy hacking Twitchell's," James said wryly.
Nick opened a new tab and brought up the Wi-Fi's admin page. "Want me to change the password?" Actually, the network name would have been a better choice. Squidducken isn't in any of Brutifier's lists. "Don't worry about that now," Jenny said. "I want to see how the ID badge tracking works." Moments later, Nick had connected to Twitchell's update server, and from there he hopped straight to the student security server and got the SSTag geolocator client running. "There you go." He pointed at a map of Twitchell's on the screen. It was still covered with dots. "That's everyone at school." He zoomed toward the house and found his dorm room. Sure enough, there were two dots right on the edge of the room where the window was. He turned the name tags on, and N. Thompson and J. Pashley appeared above the dots. "Back it up again," James said. "I can't believe they're doing this. Can you find Collier?" Nick zoomed out until the whole school, including the other dorms, was in view. He entered N. Sokolov into the search bar, and one of the dots in C block was highlighted with a yellow ring. And you saw us here? Jenny asked. Nick zoomed right out until the South Coast and Brighton were at the bottom of the screen. No dots anywhere nearby. Jenny sighed. You really think that Collier's got access to this too?
He's getting a feed to his phone, Nick said. He used it to find me. I was hidden in the woods outside his dorm, and he walked straight to my hiding place, and then followed Cece after she took my badge. He's definitely got access to the live data. I don't know how, but if he's hacked in, I should be able to find some traces.
And he can find traces of you, James said.
Collier couldn't find his own phone number in his own phone, Elf said, one hand holding her wine, the other smoothing out a patch of pale fabric on the table next to the sewing machine. He didn't hack anything.
Even so, James had a good point. If someone else had hacked the network, then they could have installed a tripwire or monitoring software to keep an eye out for anyone else.
Nick had been careful, but there was still a chance that his presence had been noticed.
So Twitchell's, which means the inspector, and Collier know we've been coming back to Elf's, Jenny said. But do they know about anywhere else?
We've been careful, James said. I don't think I've taken my ID badge out with me. It lives in my school jacket pocket, and I don't dare wear that on the streets of Brighton. Someone might see me.
Nick was playing with the software as they spoke, sifting through all of the menus in a systematic way and checking all of the running services at the same time.
Do you think it stores the data? Jenny asked.
I think this SSTag application is just a live tracker, Nick said, opening the installation folder and checking how big it was.
It receives data from somewhere else, probably a box dedicated to picking up the geodata. This application then gives a live view.
It also sends the live data onward to a couple of other places. It might be how they manage the door access. I'll have to investigate everywhere the data's sent. Even if it's not stored here, there could be a database on another system at Twitchell's. And it could be stored somewhere before it gets to the Twitchell's server.
If there is a database, can you hack it?
Jenny left his shoulder and grabbed a couple of mugs from the draining board and some milk from the fridge.
If the data's stored at Twitchell's, probably yes. I've got admin access almost everywhere already. But if it's not at Twitchell's and it's on a private server somewhere else, then maybe, maybe not. If they've got good security, then probably not.
Jenny poured the tea and gave Nick a red mug with a chipped handle.
Thanks, he said.
Thank you, she said, sitting next to Elf. Without you, we'd never have known we were being tracked.
She's right, James said, without being prompted. We owe you.
So, Elf said, finishing her wine, you kept your end of the bargain, and we've given you Wi-Fi. I'd call this a win-win.
All thoughts that Nick had of leaving Twitchell's and going back to school in Luton disappeared when he saw James conjure up the portal. It was not like Nick didn't suspect that magic existed. Ever since a crow delivered him a memory card which got him into a darknet forum, he'd suspected that there was something out there operating beyond normal life. And when the inspector had confirmed that the crow was the reason he was at Twitchell's, he'd half expected he'd be having lessons on animal hacking techniques. But the only unusual thing about the lessons at Twitchell's was how many there were and how much extra work they made you do.
Magic portals, actual magic portals conjured in the air, solved his need for more internet access. But he still had his granddad to think of.
Can you make a portal to anywhere? He asked. He'd nearly finished his tea.
Yes and no, Jenny said, topping up his mug from the pot. It's all about the symbols you have to draw. There seems to be symbols for most places, but finding them isn't always easy.
She poured the last of the tea into her mug.
Plus, you have to be careful. You can't just make a portal in the middle of a busy street. It'd be pandemonium.
This is crazy.
Nick looked around. He was sitting in a house in Brighton with 3 fourth years he'd only met the day before, and who he'd mistaken for normal kids. Not to mention he was now friends with a real-life monkey.
You've got a quill that can make portals to anywhere, and it works using some unknown magic. Actual magic, not a trick or anything. And you're using it to travel from Twitchell's to Brighton. You could be on a beach in Florida, or anywhere.
You have to be careful with magic, Elf said.
She rolled the empty wine glass sideways in her fingers. A single drop of red traced a curved path on the inside of the glass, picking up speed until it completely dispersed, leaving a delicate streak behind. Magic does a lot of harm, and it doesn't ever do much good.
How come more people don't know about it? Shouldn't you be famous or something?
We use it carefully, Jenny said. We're pretty sure that magic used to have a much bigger role in the world. These days, even though it's still powerful, it doesn't seem to impact regular life. For humans, anyway. It's a different story for animals. She looked across to where Cece had fallen asleep on her gown.
So, other than sneaking out of school, what do you use it for? Nick asked.
Jenny looked at James, who looked at Elf, who looked at her empty glass.
It's probably best if we don't tell you, Jenny said. You're leaving Twitchell's on Friday, so it's better for all of us if you don't know exactly what we're doing.
And if I'm not leaving? Nick put his mug down onto a coaster with a faded picture of the Eiffel Tower on it.
If I can use the Wi-Fi here, that solves a lot of my problems.
And if you can make a portal to Luton, I can visit my granddad every now and then.
No, James said.
One of the rules, and we don't have many rules, is that we don't ever involve adults in this. They always end up messing things up.
Or trying to enslave or kill us, Elf said, experience weighing heavy in her voice.
If you suddenly turn up at your granddad's, he'll wonder how you got there, Jenny explained. It'll end up putting us in more danger of discovery. We're already trying to keep the inspector off our backs, and now Collier too.
But you could make a portal back to Luton.
Yes, if we really needed one, we could conjure one, Jenny said.
Well, we could if we got the book back, James said. Without the book, we can only go to places that I've already found the symbol for, and I never drew one for Luton. I think the closest place was St. Albans.
That put paid to the idea of visiting his granddad.
Nick remembered the screenshot he'd taken just before the caretaker had cut the Wi-Fi. He opened it up.
Take a look at this, he said. Are Collier and Hector anywhere near the book?
Jenny came back over, and she and James looked at the image.
That's us here at Elf's, James said, pointing to the cluster of three dots near the bottom.
The book was with the bishop over here. He moved his finger left, due west.
The other two dots were much further north.
It looks like they're a few miles outside town, Jenny said, probably heading up the A23.
Then they must have already stolen the book, James said, and were on their way back to Twitchell's.
We don't know that for sure, Jenny reasoned. This isn't proof. They might have just been out on a drive.
Seems pretty conclusive to me, James said. Why else would they have come anywhere near Brighton?
Jenny wasn't so sure.
If we get access to the historic data, and we can put them right where the book was, then we can go after them. Otherwise it's too risky.
Okay, Nick said. I can do some digging around Twitchell's network in case the data is stored somewhere easy to access. And I'll try to find out where the data comes from before it hits the student security server. But it will take time, and I won't get far if I've only got an hour every evening while being watched over by the caretaker.
Spending time here might get you into trouble, Jenny said.
We can't stop the inspector from punishing you if he finds out.
It looks likely that he knows we've been coming back here.
And it's my house, Elf said, holding up her glass, so you follow my rules.
Nick wasn't sure he'd seen Elf follow any rules at all, but he nodded solemnly anyway.
And you need to get better at travelling through portals. I think I bruised a rib on landing. James put his hand under an arm and winced dramatically.
You need to learn to fall better, Jenny told him. Elf and I were fine.
James stopped rubbing his bruised rib and nodded toward Elf.
I haven't spent time performing in a circus, nor, he nodded at Jenny, do I have special strength?
He stopped short when she narrowed her eyes at him.
Can we make up a spare room for Nick to sleep in?
Jenny was adept at changing the subject.
The second guest bedroom's already made up, Elf shrugged. It's nothing special, but it's better than sleeping in a dorm.
So you've changed your mind, James asked. You're staying at Twitchell's.
Until I get expelled for hacking, or for travelling through magic portals, Nick said. If that's okay with you.
Everyone nodded, and it was decided. For the rest of Nick's time at Twitchell's, he could travel through a magical portal each night to hang out at Elf's house and use all the Wi-Fi he wanted.
And all he had to do in return was a little more hacking. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.